All right, so Mark asked me to talk about what happens when you take all of this stuff and you bring it to an end user. What do they think about it? So the first thing you need to ask is, who are your end users? And there are a number of them out there. We know, of course, soil scientists, the pedologists. I think Brian already mentioned that. Other scientists that are out there that use it. And then you look at the right-hand side. There's a bunch of folks in there that I've worked with. Regulators, planners, engineers, educators, the policymakers. And my favorite is working with lawyers. And you laugh, but lawyers like, in some regards, taxonomy. Why? It's black and white. It is what it is. You get on a stand with a lawyer and they don't want you going, well, you know, might be something else. That's not good. I've been in that situation. They want an answer, yes or no. So there are some advantages with understanding what your end user wants. In the end, they want information. And I think that's what we have to remember when dealing with any types of changes to any system. And we have to take a step back, think about why we classify or categorize. We want to organize it, compare it, convey information, and interpret it. So the question is, does taxonomy do that in its current state? Yeah, probably does. Does it have problems? Yeah, probably does. But it does do the basics here. How we classify, it's a dichotomous key. And I spend a lot of time with my students because they look at taxonomy at first and they go, this is just nuts. It doesn't make sense, but I explain, it's just a dichotomous key. It's a series of yes-no questions. And if you can get through that, I think that's good. By the time you're done, you realize that it is flexible and that you can change things with new data. And I guess that's really what we're here today to talk about, how things could be changed to get that information conveyed in a better way. So let's take a look at some systems and keys that are out there, just to put it into a perspective that I have to deal with students that are coming from, you know, multiple backgrounds. Trees, right? You've got anybody here ever use a key to identify trees? Yes, okay, a couple of you, good. At our school, we've got the one class that does that is a weed out class for forestry. They make their taxonomy so difficult sometimes that if you can't get through it, you don't become a forester. So, and I don't think we quite do that with taxonomy. But basically, when you look at trees, there are a lot of different systems available on keying them out. And the detail varies as far as how far you key it out. And what's really bizarre, if you've ever done this, you use a different key and you might end up in a different location, which I never thought would happen until I tried using two different keys and I classified one oak as, you know, one place it came out as a white oak and the other place it came out as a red oak, and that was using the key. So the key was just bad, but it was a published key. On the other hand, soils, it's basically one's available. Okay, we can argue again whether it's a good one or not, but as one is available, and if you use it right, the keys, it should be the same. Now again, we can argue whether you have enough data to do it right. But in general, you can come up with the same result. My students don't always, just because they don't have all the data, but that's another story. So I just want you to take a look at this. These are two different dichotomous keys for trees. And if you just look at how they start at a different point. So if you're starting at a different point, you may end up with a different tree. So again, it's important to understand one of the advantages to taxonomy. So the question is, does our system work? And I think that's what we've been talking about throughout the day here. My question is, of course, I'm an extension person as well, so I can't give a straight answer. It's yes and no. It works for the most part, but it has some problems. So yes, I'm going to start with the good. What's good about it? And then you can figure out what comes next. So it is a dichotomous key. It is rigid. If you have all the information needed, you will come out with an answer. And it conveys information. So we all know, here's the RAINS series. It's a fine, loamy, siliceous, semi-active, thermic, typic, paleoqualt. Is there a lot of information presented there? Yes or no? Yeah, there is. Now, again, we can argue whether it's all needed. That's another story. But the information is there. If you take that and then talk to a lawyer, and that lawyer asks a question about it, you can answer it, right? The information is in that classification. Whereas if you look at the English oak, Quercus rubra, is that giving you a lot of information, yes or no? Okay, you know it is a Quercus, you know it is an oak, but what the heck does rubra or rubra mean? What does it mean? It's just somebody came up with that name. It doesn't give you all of this information. It doesn't transmit it. You have to know this back from the key. So to me, taxonomy has its advantage in that everything is there. You know, it's in the name. The bad. Daunting terminology. I think we've heard that a little bit. Lots and lots of terms. I liken it to learning a second language, and that's actually what I tell my students. It's like, just don't worry about don't get a bent out of shape. It is just learning a language. Once you get over that, you learn it. But there are some issues. There are some similar sounding names in there. So that does cause a little confusion with the students. They don't always understand why you have to make sure everything is spelled correctly. But we can get over that. But if you ever looked at other classifications, they're just the same. We classify things as scientists, and I'm picking all scientists in there. Why do we classify it in some regards? It's so that we can say we're different. We've got a way of making ourselves different from you by having a classification system. Okay? And see, we know it and you don't. So it's set us aside. So look at rocks, look at trees, look at whatever. I was on a grad committee with a botanist, and during his defense, they were arguing over which species of grass it was. And I'm looking at it going, they look the same to me. Well, he's probably looking at the soil saying, looks the same to him too. But it boiled down to whether it had three hairs or four hairs on the stem. So that's, don't think that we are the only ones that have a complex classification scheme, right? That doesn't mean we can't be better. That doesn't mean they can't be better. And now, of course, the ugly. And this is, I think, where the fundamental changes really need to look at closely. Inconsistencies. Measured versus inferred data. And if you have to have measured data, you better use measured data. And then, what is the importance to the user? Keep the user in mind. Because if you don't keep the user in mind, you just do it for us. And if we just do the taxonomy, the classification for us, it's just not going to fly. So, a couple things here. The aquic suborder. I think, Brian, you mentioned this. The inconsistencies as far as where you make the measurements from, what they actually mean. And they vary from order to order. It would be nice if everything was the same, so that when I go to a lawyer and he can look at that classification, he understands it. Okay, and I say simplify it to a lawyer, that's the second grade level. Right? It's very simple. Aquic grade groups are the same way. The numbers vary, and it depends on where, on what, which order you're in, and also depends on which suborder you're in. Okay, just as an example, an aquic haplodult and an aquic paleodult, they make the measurements differently as far as where you start looking for redox depletions. Does this confuse students? Yeah. Does it confuse the other end users? Absolutely. So this is just a simple change. Well, I say simple. Nothing is simple. I understand that. All right. Measured versus inferred and versus a definition. Oxyacquic. Definitely one of those that I have been having issues with. I see Larry smiling in the back. So we've had this in the South for quite a while. So oxyacquic conditions, saturated but not reduced, do not contain redoxymorphic features, and it's identified by measuring saturation. So again, the definition, saturated, not reduced, and do not contain redox features. That's the definition. So we have a situation like that, but in the field, this is how things sometimes get applied. Aquic is where you have 2-chroma. Oxyaquic is where you have something other than 2-chroma depletions. Guys, these are all redox features. Right? So you've already thrown out the definition. So then, when you look at it, you can't have aquic conditions in there. You have to have saturation above 100 centimeters for 20 consecutive or 30 cumulative days, which means the water table could be 0 to 100 inches or 100 centimeters. That's a pretty big range. Okay, a lawyer doesn't like that, right? They want a number, or at least a closer range. And you have to measure it. So was this the intent of that in taxonomy? I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. So you look at this soil. Redox features start at 30 centimeters, has 2-chroma depletions at 84. Is it oxyaquic by the definition or by the keys to taxonomy? And the answer is no, because I don't have any data. Right? So now I have hydrograph data. It's continuous saturation for 20 days at 90, cumulative saturation for 30 days at 81 centimeters. It's not reduced above 100 centimeters. I have that data as well. Does it make the definition? Well, not really, because it has redox features. So what do we do? Right? Something there I think needs to change. And then finally, think about the importance to the user. The users want to know, at least the ones I work with, the regulators, lawyers, health department folks, they want to know where the saturation in the and seasonal high water table is. I think Mark had pointed out early on, that's a critical part. What's important? Epi versus endosaturation. I'll be honest with you, most of the folks I work with, they don't care. If I'm working with health departments, if it's wet, it's not suitable. End of story. They don't care whether it's a perched water table or an apparent water table. It doesn't matter. Restrictive horizons, yeah, they want to know that. Right? Other features that affect land use, and I think, again, we've talked about this, surface and subsurface texture, pH, corrosive. So being able to add some of that information into the taxonomy would be great. Climatic conditions, okay. As I think was pointed out, I'm in North Carolina. It's humid. You don't have to have that in the classification to know that. If you're in other areas, you know what the climate is, so you don't need it in the classification. So just simplifying things, and this is how I kind of simplify it for my students, is looking at the classification and kind of giving them an idea. I say this is not perfect, this is not 100% accurate, but it gives you a rough idea as to where you would expect water tables to be on a sloping or on a landscape given this classification. And this type of relationship is pretty powerful, has a lot of information to it. So the next steps, consider the end user. And I think that is one of the big things in any fundamental changes. Reevaluate what is most critical to the land use and the interpretation. I think Mark had said it, putting water as a bigger issue rather than climate, absolutely. Be consistent at least within the orders. I think between the orders it would make a lot more sense. Move saturation up so that it becomes more important than where it is now. And then move climatic information maybe down even to the family level. Okay? And I think that would help things as far as the end user would be considered. And I want you to think about the end users. Okay, you know, the end users, they may be soil scientists, but they may not be, and a lot of them aren't. So you want to be able to convey information to them. And that should be our goal more than anything else, not to separate us from them, but to convey information. So rather than saying we throw everything out, change it from the ground up, change so that we get the most amount of information being presented at any given point. So with that, I'm done. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so the question is interpretations versus taxonomy. Yeah, you can. The only problem when you deal with septic tanks and some of the interpretations, they're all based on local regulations. So you can't necessarily I guess I'd like to make have it so that taxonomy is at least helping and supporting that, and not kind of confusing the issue. But I mean, I agree with you in general, though. But you're absolutely right. If you're just using the map to make your interpretation, which you never should do, okay, just so we're clear on that. But there are places that they say you have to classify the soil during your site evaluation. So if you've got to do that, you've got to use taxonomy. So taxonomy should be able to illustrate what you see at that site.
And the idea is to, at least one of my ideas, is to build into the taxonomy where we can make more interpretations at even a lower level. And Toby has some good examples. You know, I think if you take out, you know, the moisture regimes and things like that, you can build it into a third order and have better interpretations than you have right now.
Yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
In some cases, you know, like Toby's example, where you've got something like a half-bird, it doesn't tell you anything. A tippet, it doesn't tell you anything. You know, and that would not even be at, you know, that would be maybe second order level or something like that. So I think the idea is to make the changes so we can make better interpretations. I mean, I think that's everyone's goal. I mean, we want to do an inventory. Clearly, that's a positive thing. That's the point that Randy was making and Toby was making, that, you know, our soil survey is a great inventory. But what we want to do is be able to use that information to the best. And for, you know, the user to be able to use that information.
Yeah.
So we can make the interpretations if we're the only ones that sort of in turn understand what the taxonomic, you know, classification is and its implications, but somebody else might want to go beyond that.
I just want to agree with what you said and further say, you know, this offers an opportunity for not just have NRCS making the interpretation. It allows a lot of different people, if you have a very robust system, to make their own interpretation. And I think that's important.
Absolutely.
It could be a regional, a local one, and it certainly wouldn't be as general as one that the National Cooperative Survey would produce. I mean, some of those aren't very relevant.
Well, that's what we would want, is other people to use our information and make their own interpretations, to be able to understand what we've got and say, okay, I can understand how I can do it for this or that. I mean, I don't think the interpretations out of the soil survey are ever going to go away. And I mean, that's a great part of the soil survey, but, you know, it should be able to go beyond that. People should be able to reach out to that information. And it's all out there. Mickey pointed this out. I mean, you can go and you have an app and you go out there and press the button and you can get this, but you have to be able to understand what that is.
Right.
Other questions or comments today, Mickey?
Can you speculate on what soil taxonomy might look like if we took climate out until we get down to the family level? I really think we're probably going to end up doing that anyway if we go to the universal soil classification system.
Well, I think that's what it would, I mean, it would end up looking more like WRB. But, you know, I haven't really sat down and mapped it out what it would look like. But, yeah, I mean, it could really have a big effect. I think Mark did it.
I have some examples.
Yeah, you have some examples of where it would simplify.
I don't think it is either.
No.
I mean,
you'll have less.
It is a big change because now we've decreased the number of taxes that we have.
Right.
We've been able to add some extra information because then the subgroup would go down to where the great group was, and then we could add some more where the subgroup is, so we would have more information that would be provided. And then again, we could make more interpretations at that level of the taxonomy.
Well, just as a final point, to me, those are the type of changes I think we need to be talking about. We don't completely go away with soil taxonomy, but let's modify it, go away to give us a better end product that's better for users.
Well, I hope that, I know that my idea, and I think that most of us in here's idea, is not to reinvent the wheel. I mean, I think the hierarchical system is a good system. And Toby was exactly right when he goes through all the formative elements. Once you understand what those formative elements are, it starts to come to you. I've worked with
right.
the
the marine folks were doing the subaqueous soils, and some of them look at, you know, the taxonomy like David says, and or Toby says, and they just laugh because it doesn't seem to make any sense. But then some of them realize, like, okay, that says sulfide, that means there's a bunch of sulfide. Well, the taxonomic system that they have has none of that. And then you can put in something, you know, about the end value, and now we know that it's, you know, it has no bearing capacity, it has sulfides in it. So all these things are in the system.
You just
need to pull the right ones out and then work with the definitions, and so it's not so difficult, so that it is consistent.
Okay, agreed.
I did want to ask about the universal. So you talked about that, Nick. About the universal
classification.
So, is everybody here okay? So this is sort of our open forum, and so we want to hear what everybody has to say as much as possible. And then again, we're going to continue on to lunch, and we can talk about it some more. So, but do we really need three systems? Do we need a WRB and a universal and a soil taxonomy? I mean, I think we need one system. So, which one? Well, hopefully almost all of us in the room would agree that the soil taxonomy is the system that we want to use.
We would agree.
Yes, I would say most of us in the room.
But would the Australians agree? And would the Italians agree?
Well, I think if we made it where that it would be acceptable to them, I would say yes. I mean, maybe, you know, Curtis, you probably worked on that committee, and then you've got an idea on what they like and don't like and some things like that. So what's your insight?
Well, I can tell you one thing they don't like, and they would agree with a couple people here, and that is putting climate in soils goes over like a lead balloon. But it's an old argument, because if you look in the Guy Smith interviews, he talks about you put a thermometer in soil and measure its temperature, that's a property. You put TDR in soil and measure its moisture, that's a property. It's a measurable property. So they don't really, they sit more as a factor instead of a property. And, but, you know, what David talked about, he's in North Carolina, he knows it's true. That's true. But a UDOL versus an USDOL versus a zero, they're very, very different things. So we're dealing with a multi-scale aspect here. So if you're looking, you know, zoomed in versus zoomed out, it conveys, it has different meaning. So,
but would it hurt to move that somewhere else?
Yeah.
Why can't we move it at to the family level? Or why can't we have something that I would like to see is floating? Because the family particle size is so important. And then you need to have so much information if you're trying to do the mineralogy class and the activity class and some things like that. So why do we have that? You've got to measure a lot of things on the family particle size class. I can teach the students to get, you know, close enough where they can do that.
Just go back to earlier question. My name is Dan Pennock. I'm from Canada, so I can talk about the Canadian system a bit. I mean, Canada is never going to adopt soil taxonomy, and we're never going to adopt the WRB, because most soil survey in Canada is now done by private consultants, and there's nobody to tell them to change that system. I mean, our equivalent of your large groups through agriculture in Canada have been disbanded. We have no national expert committee on soil classification anymore. So even if we, I'm not sure, we actually made the Canadian Society of Soil Science said, hey, we're going to adopt soil taxonomy, there'd be no way to get anyone to agree to do that. And a private consultant isn't going to agree to undergo dozens of hours of retraining just because a group of soil science said, oh, we're going to adopt the soil taxonomy. So there's no practical way to make that happen. But the question of international communication among soil scientists, yes, it will be either soil taxonomy or WRB. I mean, that's critical, that we have an international communication system, like the Latin taxonomy and for plants. But nationally, the Canadians, the Australians, we like our system just fine, and we're not going to give that up, throw it all at our soil maps so that we can adopt soil taxonomy. So I think the question is not, will those nations adopt it? It's, It's what standard will be used for international communication and
soil science.
And right now, a new group like the Global Soil Partnership says, well, either one, right? You can use WRB, you can use soil taxonomy, but it has to be one of those two for international communication. And in the short term, at least, that's a viable solution. But I think the idea of other countries adopting it, it's just not going to happen.
Well, I've always understood that the WRB is meant to be a translator. And so it's not meant to be something that you can use for mapping, but it's used to translate between the Canadian system and soil taxonomy, or the Canadian system and this other system. And so the WRB is not really a classification system, but a translator that sort of puts the two things together. And so in that sense, you can sort of argue that, yes, we do need a system like WRB. But I think that what we should use is the best system. We could argue that ours is the best system, and that's what we're arguing. I don't know if that's the case or not. But I don't know. I can't remember whose slide it was. They said 137 countries use our system, so yours. So I don't know what that represents. Canada will never go to soil taxonomy, but I don't know what never means.
Well, until there's a national agency that can somehow impose it, it would never happen. And we've lost that, I'm afraid. So at least for the short term, there would be no entity to say, hey, we're going to adopt soil taxonomy. There's no possibility that could occur, at least in the short term.
So there's no issues with the Canadian system?
Lots of issues. but there's nobody to change it. The discussion you're having could happen in Canada because there's no committee left to change it.
But I mean, we're making essentially our own committee. I mean, there is the National Cooperative Soil Survey, and we will work through those pathways, however we have to do it. Okay? And
we have done the same thing with the Canadian Society of Soil Science, formed something called the Pedology Subcommittee, because when it became clear that our federal group was going to abandon soil taxonomy, then somebody had to take it on. But of course, we don't have any resources. I mean, we can keep it ticking along at a small level, but you lack the ability to have correlation tours and national meetings all fall away when there's no federal agency that's running. So it's a real logistical problem when you bring up that lack of support. I mean, the home conference is great.
I'm not very familiar with other systems, so this might be a naive question, but I'm wondering, in planning for revising the soil taxonomy, would it be helpful to ask the question, can we create maps to other taxonomic systems by making changes so that we don't have to encourage people to adopt our language, but there are clear maps to other systems? And with those changes, are there opportunities to make those?
You mean an integrator between the classification systems?
How much closer do we get to other systems by making small tweaks?
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah. Every Canadian soil scientist at this meeting had to translate their taxonomy into soil taxonomy. And we do that every time we publish a paper outside of the Canadian Journal of Soil Science. I mean, you have to correlate. So we can pick the WRB or soil taxonomy. Almost all of us pick soil taxonomy. So it actually, I mean, as a translator, it performs the same role. I mean, to publish anywhere except Canada, we have to use typically soil taxonomy to express what our soil is. But it's hard to do it, right? Because we have to sit down and put to the book. And so having some sort of tool that allow ready correlation across would be a real benefit to international communications.
Thank you.
How about we move on to the next step, which would be to get a group together to try to formalize how to revise soil taxonomy?
So, like I said at the very beginning, this is not just a session where we talk about the issues and then we go away and that's it. And so, again, this task force has been set up. I guess from, at least right now, I don't know how that will change. Maybe Dave, you have an idea. Brian and I will try to lead that, right, Brian? And then if you're interested, please contact Brian or I, and that you're interested in being on this task force. I don't know how many people we will have. You know, I don't think we want 25 people, you know, especially in the beginning. But we want everybody's ideas. There's no question about that. And, you know, maybe this isn't true, but I feel like I'm very pragmatic. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't think we're going to get anywhere. I think it'll get rejected. So I think we need to make the changes that can be easily made that are not going to be a huge issue for Mike and the other folks that are at the, you know, at the National Popular Soil Survey, at the center, those guys that are mapping. There's going to be issues. But we can't just say, well, we can't do anything because we've already made the maps and they're already classified. We cannot do that. You know, we've got to think about who's going to come after us. Hopefully we'll have soil scientists, you know, in 25 and 30 years. Hopefully we'll have pedologists. Hopefully we'll have a classification system that people will use. So we can't just stop right now and say, well, the once-over's done, everything's classified. We can't make these changes because we've already, it's already out there. We can't do that. Right? Right? Everyone agree? Hopefully. So I would say that that's the, and it's like, okay, let's get the ideas down that we can change. What are the things that we can change that'll go forward?
I'll follow up on that. Is when we were initially thinking about the symposium, one idea we bounce around about maybe bringing someone in from soil chemistry, soil physics, soil fertility, and kind of give their perspectives on soil taxonomy. We decided not to do that. We said, you know what, let's kind of stick within pedology and get our ducks in a row, get our thoughts together. But we do want to, at some point, start expanding out and asking our, you know, the people in the other disciplines and our other end users about their opinion. So that'll be at some stage along the process as well.
Yeah, I thought, Brian, I thought your example with the phosphorus was an excellent example, because if people can see that they can use that information that aren't right now with us, you know, that are the nutrient management folks and the soil chemistry folks, and they can see that they can use that, they're going to start to buy in. And that's really what we want, is that the other people to buy in for something that's going to help them, and then they can look at the rest of it and say, oh, I can use it for this, and I can use it for this. And it'll go on down the line. Back to
you. So, you know, first of all, with the WRB, I know many of you haven't worked with WRB, and I've been lucky to go on several meetings on my own time, my own and I've learned quite a bit about it, and it has transitioned from being a translation to between European species and really truly international, because it's been 20 years now they've been working on it, and also then the mappable product. And they've done that mostly for the poor countries, so that they have a tool. Anyway, and then also, you know, the Latin American Congress that's happening next week, almost of those 137 countries, they're banned because many Latin American countries have been bought to use WRB now. It's just, I can't, that's where we thought we had and we didn't. So, anyway, but my thought on things as a private citizen is that I think we have to start at the fundamentals. Something that really struck me with Marty's talk was that the diagnostic features have not changed that much. You know, the big classic diagnostic features haven't changed. And I'd like us to start from the fundamentals of the diagnostic features. I know one part of the universal system, you know, when the Universal Committee at IUSS put together was actually Dr. Marner's work in trying to get everyone to be able to describe the PEDOM exactly the same way internationally, because it is different internationally. And they haven't been able to keep up with us very well, because we've been changing that as well. But the committee arises. But in any case, that's also a place that we should start and really make sure we're solid there. That's how we describe soil and then the diagnostic features and get that really, really solid as a checklist. And instead work up the classification, because I think that I've been on the WRB tours, the way they run is that we have people from all over the world with all sorts of classification systems, and everybody approaches the pit to find all the diagnostic criteria, get that solid in their mind and how they describe it, and then they go into their recordings and we all classify it. And then we have a discussion as to how we classified it. And then WRB uses that and says, all right, we're putting it here. The majority of you do it this way and we're putting it here. And but what I learned from that is that we had to describe the diagnostic features first as to what our basis was for how we classified it. And I think that's the basis for
Well, I think that's an excellent idea, is to start with those and try to remove the inconsistencies and look at how they're written and to try to get it so that it's very clear and to make it so that everyone can understand, you know, what is being asked for in that criteria and what it means. And to get it consistently, like,
and as someone who's very connected with interpretations now, I feel that the diagnostic features that I'm directing the staff that works with me to focus in on and enumerate within the database to make some sense. And that's where I want them to go. To like build something very interesting in terms of interpretations that other folks can use. I mean, that's just orientation personally
that I'm going. Yeah, I like Dan, I'm another Canadian here, and I just want to come back to one point that I'm just a little concerned about. The group is saying, okay, let's keep this to pathologists, let's not embrace the other users at this point in time or whatever. I think that's a real dangerous thing. It's potentially going to still foster that this product is really just for pathologists. Yes, I get the point of that we want to build and improve upon our language of what we're doing, but we want to also foster use of this for many other agencies. So I think that it's really critical to have a few people on the committee that represent ecology, that represent planners, that kind of thing, or multidisciplinary users. And so that's just my recommendation, that don't lose sight that that's really critical. Even if you go through the stage of you engage what your committee has built, and then you go through a feedback stage where you provide, this is our recommendations to date, and you go to a much wider audience. That's another approach of doing it as well. But don't keep it insular, because it won't be a great product. I just caution that that's a danger that we have for the next 15, 20 years or whatever the period of time that we're dealing with.
I agree with that, and maybe next year we could do something like this where we do bring in, where we're a year into this committee, and we bring in the soil chemists and the physicists and have them talk about their perspectives on what their needs are for soil taxon.
Again, the novice in the group. I organize a lot of things for what I do for a living for a cat. Not that you all can, but. I mean, it seems like a really good opportunity to have a series of workshops to discuss maybe the regional stakeholder groups that give that work credence, you might want to do it stepwise and, you know, engage in some workshops where you draw on people from key communities that not only obviously other disciplines within the soil sciences, but that I can argue the potential, but also the broader community, and maybe that be a step after the, you know, the disciplines are engaged because they have a network already there. Just thought.
Thank you. Randy.
I don't want to cut into lunch. I know we're all hungry. So there's a lot of things we all agree on. You know, I like this idea of writing it all positively. I mean, that would really help moving the climate down. I think a lot of people would find that. A lot of easy things out there. Actually, I put definition, make it consistent. All these things are, I think, low-hanging fruit that several people said. There's one thing that hasn't been said, and that is I think there's a lot of very interesting things in taxonomy that pedogenically are interesting, but are almost impossible to map and really don't affect use and management. I can think of the Gloucester horizon. I'm not sure that's a really cool horizon. We've got lots of them. I don't know how you can ever map them, and I don't know really why it matters. Ortstein's another example of it. There are a lot of things that are in there that are interesting and really nice, but if you want to simplify it, they're on the chopping block. And I think that if we really thought about it, there's a number of things like that are in there. But, you know, like Mickey said, maybe it's a rare instance, or it really isn't important, and do we need it? Anyway, that's my point.
Well, I think Marty made that case. You know, there many of the ones that were there from 1975 are still there. But then there's all this other list that really isn't diagnostic. I mean, the one that I hate the most is fragile soil properties. It's not diagnostic. It's, why do we have that? You know, it's just, you know, we've got another couple paragraphs or something like that. That someone that doesn't know what's going on reads through. They spend their time at it, and then who knows? Maybe 2 years down the line, they figure out that I didn't need to read that because it doesn't matter in how it classifies. What? Why is that in our classification? So those are really good points. And you know, those are the things that we need to consider.
Follow up on that, Randy. I wonder if what we're dealing with is the hybrid between a scientific classification and a utilitarian classification. And so you get like the Intersol, for example. I mean, it was put in there to preserve the A soil concept, that A horizon over C horizons regardless the bioclimatic zone that you're in. That's one thing. And also, you know, that illuvial, the EO to BP or the EO to BH, in a lot of cases, it really doesn't have a lot of utilitarian application, but scientifically, pedologically, it's there. But on the other hand, the Aristotle order was, I mean, that boundary basically was to separate the sown from the unsown. In other words, where you can dry land farm and where you couldn't dry land farm without irrigation. So it's really a mixture of. And Colby, I think he started out, his first slide was really great, but it was the whole evolutionary development, you know, going all the way up and all. So that's all scientific stuff. It's not used to management so much. So both are in there. So.
I think we kind of need to consider the timing of where we are right now, too. And my thoughts are with the, I guess, our advertising for the new director of the Soil Survey Division. So I don't know what administrative change that might bring within NRCS, but we certainly need to hope that whoever the new director is, that they would be committed in some way to accept it. Some pretty significant changes in soil taxonomy.
Well, the new director could be another new director in 1 year or 10 years.
What's happening?
Yes. There's clearly, I think we need.
34 years.
I mean, clearly we have to go through the process. That's what we're used to, working within the National Cooperative Soil Survey process and things like that. But I think in the beginning, we shouldn't even worry about that. we should get to something that we can agree upon. And if we can agree upon it, you know, those of us in the room that represent the folks that have been in this for a long time, and the folks that have been, you know, this is their sort of middle career, and then the young folks that are in here that are listening to this and happen to say, I have no idea what we're talking about because, you know, they haven't been here long enough, but they understand that, we're committed to make these changes. We're, you know, it's important to us that we're here and everyone's listening and offering their thoughts. And so I don't think we should worry so much about that, because if the group here says that this is the best thing, it would really make me angry if we get to the NRCS and they say no. That the person that's the director says, nah, forget it.
Well, I agree with you theoretically, but practically, I'll use Illustrated Guide as an example. I don't think we would ever have been able to work on that as a work group if we didn't have the cooperation from Dave Smith. You know, and he was committed to that project, and he also gave us some resources to use. Like he provided Craig Pitzler, who was a retired NRCS, very knowledgeable about soil taxonomy, and he actually did a lot of the editing. If we don't, frankly, Toby, you, me, Marty, you know, the rest of us, we don't have resources to do that. So we're going to have some help and cooperation from NRCS.
Well, I think you better, include NRCS at the beginning of the process in order to have buy-in as well. And then just bring something at the very end, like, aha, like, oh, whoa, 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 you know. And I think in terms of just working with people, that's a really smart move. At least have a few representatives to be a part of it.
Everybody's invited.
And it needs to be clear that this is a triple SA, Burn Group, Task Force, whatever it's called. That this is the Soil Science Society of America, that's the driver of this. But the other part of that is it needs to dovetail very closely with the National Cooperative Soil Survey, because those are two separate entities, but there's no reason they can't work in concert with bringing the NRCS along with the process, because they do need to be part.
I mean, Mike is a member of the SSSA, and Doug is a member, right? So, and we are all supposed to be part of the National Cooperative Soil Survey.
It's transparent. It needs to be clear that these are the drivers, these are the people that control it, not Dave Smith or whoever else. Now, ask for resources when they may say, we don't like what you're doing, I'm not giving you. That's the issue. You pay your money, you pay your chance.
One thing I would say that on this, when you think about taxonomy, that's part of the soil survey. But if you link this change to taxonomy, in my mind, to the future of the soil survey, that is a sellable thing. We need to be thinking about what the soil survey would be like in 5 years or 10 years, planning for that, and part of that change in the taxonomy. It's all linked. And I don't have any specific glorified way, we need to change, get rid of the climate thing. I can see good and bad to that. But there has to be a group that's going to say, okay, the benefit of that is greater than where we're at right now, and have buy-in of high enough people in the system to make it happen. And there will be, I think, support if you can link it again to the future of the whole system.
I think that's our goal. I mean, you recognize that the soil survey is out there, and it's a, the inventory is a wonderful tool. I mean, there really isn't anything in the rest of the world that's like that we have. And it could just sit there if we just eventually just ignored and just went on the way we're going, as far as I can.
Yeah,
Joe, well, I say then we're going to go.
Along those lines, I know several of us in here are involved in this new strategic plan. There seems to be that there probably ought to be some connection made here as we're developing this, the NCSS strategic plan. Go ahead and get it out there on the forefront, and then it could go concurrently. That's what that was saying. I don't know how we do that, Maxine. I know you're involved.
I'm delighted with the NCSS, the Young Community Strategic Plan, because it separates a little bit from the agency. I mean, they want it to be part of the agency, but it can allow for this to happen. So I think go for it.
So it needs to be put into this document that
go for it.
Yes, that's in the goals.
Well, what are the goals? Yeah. Those are the strategic plan.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, you go for that. I'm hoping to support it, particularly at the promise business. But, you know, I think that, you know, we will grow with this a lot, personally, I think, the energy industrial within we address it, and really looking at the tech value, you know, that especially if you go right from the bottom, from the describing, you know, the diagnostic features, getting those solid, and you go in the cleaning it up all the way up. And, you know, and then I see that, you know, it's a team of one right now. And because we get our national leader for the standards that are going to be a team of two. And that all those wonderful folks in the field that hopefully have it, but it's a team of two. So, so they need your help. So just tell me, I need your help. I think this is great.
All right, so let's adjourn.